ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्यागजमरुपुरीं माधुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशम् प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितो कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातं सहगणरघुनतन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्विताश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। More on the goddess, the goddess of the material world, whether worshipped in one of the Shaktipitas, the specific places where parts of the body of Sati fell down, or some local village temple dedicated, where she's not specifically thought of as Durga, but thought of as the goddess of our village. She protects our village. We come to her. Whatever form, she's approached as a mother. That's the idea. Just with the idea that the mother is always very merciful, very kind, and personally concerned and concerned with her children and involved with them. She wants to see them do well. However, Mother Nature is not unlimitedly indulgent. Srishti, Stiti, that we see in mothers of this material world. They give birth to their children. They maintain them, but pralayam, that they don't do, usually. Now we have the age of abortion. We used to hear about the age of Aquarius is coming. It was the new age antidote to Jesus is coming. The age of Aquarius is coming, but it may or may not come, but the age of abortion is going on. Not that it's new, it's nothing new in human society, but it's going on an industrial scale. It's become accepted in human society. So the goddess, she oversees destruction also, and so you have to be careful with her, and especially in the fierce forms, the Ghora Rupam, there's a lot of blood shown. You may think, what's that got to do with the mother? Well, of course, the women in public, they like to dress nicely with saris and ornaments and so many things, but they have a lot to do with blood. The female form, when the child comes forth, I haven't seen a human child come forth, but I've seen cows, dogs. There's a lot of blood We can all say we all have, what do we have as our sahodara? There's a term, sahodara, which means brother, or sahodara means sister. Use that word in Tamil? Yeah. But our sahodara is a bunch of blood. It means in the womb with us, comes out, so much blood and so many other nasty things. It doesn't look very pleasant. You may think babies are very pleasant, but very sweet, but actually they're dirty all the time, pretty much, and they have to be cleaned up all the time. And of course, the women, if they're in their fertile age and they're not pregnant, then a lot of blood comes for a few days every month. So the goddess is very fierce, the fierce form. There's a lot of blood there, and that reminds also that if you do things wrong, blood thou art, and unto blood thou shalt return. There's a saying in the Bible, dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return. In other words, if you take the body to be the self, then the body is composed of gross material elements, and the body will again merge in the gross material elements. But if we say that we're born with blood, and the word blood is often used to mean the essence of our existence. We could say that coal is or was the lifeblood of the Dhanbad economy. I don't know if it still is. Probably is. Dhanbad, Asansol, on the border of Bihar, and so you can say it's, and West Bengal. So it's the lifeblood of the economy. In other words, if you take that out, then there's no life left. So blood is associated with life. I'd give my blood for you, you may say. Blood, sweat, and tears. If you go through many struggles and difficulties, blood. So these sayings are there. So this body is full of blood, and then if we don't become Krishna conscious, then again we'll go to another blood body, or maybe even worse, a plant body. Though the fierce goddess, that's the Shakti Pitas we're talking about. Not all of them are fierce. I mentioned Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's not stated that he visited the Shakti Pitas, although he must have gone right past them in so many places. But it is mentioned that he visited Kanyakumari, and that it's stated that he visited Madurai. So in those places, the goddess is not manifest in a horrible form, more in the form that's described in Lalita Sahasranama, where the, most of the names are, as she's in a very beautiful, mild. Generally, we see the gods as depicted in pictures, Hindu pictures. They smile very mildly. So mild in nature, although none of them are actually mild in nature. They're all doers of the world. They're all involved in the world. That's why people worship them, to get something worldly from them. So anyway, these forms Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did visit, and that gives an indication that his followers may also visit, but generally they don't visit the forms of the terrible forms, Gaura Rupan, as mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Terrible forms, Yeah, I mentioned previously there are various depictions of the various forms in various places. Garland of skulls is standard. That's a normal thing. Very red. The blood is very red. That's either often holding a severed head in the depiction. Not necessarily her own. That's only in the form of Chinnamasta. Now, one point this brings to mind, or even the very mild form of Durga, I mean, at least she's mild-faced, but she's has all the weapons in her hand, and she has one hand, she's holding the hair of the demon and getting ready to decapitate him. So, a dangerous woman, no doubt about it. Now, this gives some picture of death to those who visit her. The impression of death is there. In today's world, we don't see death much as previously. If we lived in villages, then we'd see not only humans dying, but animals dying. And for people who kill animals, well, you might see that. Well, not so much, because the people who killed animals, they lived, it depends which part of society you're from. And generally those who go to worship Kali, they're anyway animal killers and meat eaters. So the Brahmins would have their own residence area, and the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas, their own residence areas. So in the Brahmin area, you wouldn't see or hear the slaughter of animals, which generally wouldn't go on much anyway, because before the agribusiness, well, it's not really agribusiness, it's slaughter business. Before the business of animal husbandry was industrialized, to sacrifice an animal, it was a sacrifice, because a sacrifice in the sense that you're giving up something valuable, because how many people can afford to keep so many animals? That's a sign of wealth in Vedic culture. Gavaya Dhanavan is one of the signs. To have many cows especially is a sign of a wealthy person. Dhanyavan Dhanavan. And to have grains, good stock of grains, that's considered actual wealth. We may see at the present time where people may have big houses and lots of money, but if they don't have a stock of food, then they could be in a very difficult situation. Whereas people in the village may not have so much money, but if they have easy access to food. So to sacrifice an animal, it's quite a cut from one's economy, from one's financial base. And that's one reason why sacrificing a lot of animals used to be a sign, not only among the Shaktas of India, but in all different parts of the world. That was a sign of great wealth. It's something prestigious to be able to sacrifice so many animals. And in Islam we see that at the Eid they have the animal killing, and then they're supposed to distribute the meat, not put it in the freezer. They have to distribute it to the poor. So giving charity is also, can be for prestige also, not necessarily out of a sense of actually wanting to benefit others. But philanthropy is also often for boosting one's prestige, to show I have so much, I can give to others. And that reinforces the feeling, Ishvaro Ham. Yeah, I mean, if I feed you, you're improved. If I don't feed you, you're in a difficult situation. But it doesn't make a difference to me. I have so much money. I give a little to you. It doesn't affect me, but it affects you. That shows I'm superior to you. Let everyone see I'm such a good-hearted person. I'm giving so much in charity. So killing animals. In many parts of the world, animal sacrifice, maybe throughout the world, animal sacrifice was institutionalized in religion. In India here, of course, also. Now that's being stopped everywhere. But it's not that the meat eating is going down. The meat eating is increasing due to slaughterhouses. So due to slaughterhouses, people who eat meat, they say, no, you shouldn't sacrifice animals. That's not good. But they're eating meat. They get their meat in another way, and more than they would if they actually followed the Shastric prescription, which is meant to curb excessive animal slaughter. So it's hypocritical. They say, no, don't kill the animals in the sacrifice, but you put them in the slaughterhouse. Rascals. We, in one sense, for the benefit of society, we as a movement should encourage animal sacrifice and close the slaughterhouses. Srila Prabhupada, he also said that in Vedic society, if we're going to re-establish Vedic society, then we have to allow meat eating at some level. And he said, on our farms, that anyone can come as long as they work. And whatever else they do, they let them do. And then by associating with devotees, the idea is that let them do some work, and then gradually they'll become purified. And we've seen many, many cases all over the world of people who were gross meat eaters, and by association with devotees, they just left it. Most of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, they were actually already vegetarian before they came to Krishna consciousness, but not all of them. I mean, I know one of my godbrothers who joined in London, he was a butcher by profession, and he first came to devotees to harass them because he considered himself to be a good Christian. And he smoked, I don't know how many, 40 a day or something. He was a heavy smoker also. But he joined. He was 40 years old, had a family, and just came and joined the temple. He came to harass the devotees, and then he was following. Kripa Moy was distributing books in London. This man was harassing him so much, and anyway, it was around midday, so he came back to the temple and thought, I'll take lunch. And they'll get rid of this guy. The guy came right into the temple harassing him, and Prabhupada Vishnu was right there. Stop, he said. What's your problem? And then he was really strong with him, sat him down, gave prasad, and it was life-changing. So all miracles do happen. We should have a book. Krishna's Miracles. There are so many miracles. Everyone, especially in the Western countries, who comes to Krishna consciousness, it's a great miracle. And devotees can see Krishna's hand in their life. Keshav Bharati Maharaj, he said that there was a series of coincidences which couldn't just happen, just like that, one after the other, which brought him to Krishna consciousness. So there's so many things. Anyway, let's get back to Shakti, death, yeah. Not only that, many temples of the goddess, especially the terrible forms, they're next to cremation grounds. I don't know which came first. Which came first, the cremation ground or the temple, the deity? One, anyway, they're both there. So that also gives an idea of death. So something might go in their head, death. We're worshipping her and ultimately we're going to die. Some idea of renunciation might come to that. I was saying where people don't see death much, do they? Yeah, because people used to die at home and they used to have big families and they'd die at home. Now, you don't see nowadays, they rush them off to the hospital, waste 1 or 2 lakhs, and they die anyway. They waste 1 or 2 lakhs sticking some tubes in them instead of chanting Hare Krishna. If you're better to write in your will, you can all make a will. Don't take me to the hospital, let me die not in the hospital. And don't waste all that money sticking tubes in and giving injections. They're probably just injecting water anyway because they know you're going to die anyway. they have to make a show of doing something. And it's just ridiculous. But everyone thinks it's my duty. I have to bring my elderly parent to the hospital. Why? They're going to die anyway. Maybe they'll recover, but anyway, that's all it is. Someone's 85 years old and take them, they can hardly walk or talk or see or hear, and I have to take them to the hospital. They're meant for dying at that time. It sounds crass to people who think that we're just meant for living here forever, but we're not. Just die with dignity instead of trying to prolong your life unnecessarily. So if you go to one of these temples, it's not just the cremation ground is there, but it's quite likely there's a cremation going on right there, or the smell of smoke will always be there in the air. You know, that's the smoke from the cremation ground. Or it may be just you're there and some body is brought in. Ram Nam Satya Hai, they say in North India. They just remembered when someone died that the name of Ram is true. They should remember throughout their life. It would have been more helpful. So that's considered among the Shaktas. That's very good to be born, to be buried. Buried at Shaktipit, and then you get the blessings. What's their idea? That next life you'll again become a worshipper of Kali. And then what is it? Bhutva bhutva praliyate. You come into being, the nice mother, and then the mother nature with her chopper, poof, in due course of time, sends you back to another womb. And also you might find some samadhis of Shakti Upasakas, those who have worshipped Shakti, with the aim of attaining Siddhi. Siddhi in the sense of attaining some power, or can also mean among the Shaktas, among the Tantrics, to gain liberation from the material world, liberation from the mother. So they worship the mother, they worship Maya to get free from Maya. Doesn't work, actually. You're supposed to worship Krishna, but they're envious of Krishna, so they don't do that. They have another idea. So everyone goes to Shakti to get some Shakti from her. Dhanam dehi, yasham dehi, give me wealth, give me fame, give me beautiful women. But the tantrics especially, they're really serious about getting some heavy Shakti. There are two kinds. One worships to get some powers, and tantrics are very feared maybe not so much in this area, this Tamil Nadu area, but Kerala, Bengal, Orissa, Assam, up in the northeast, there's so, and throughout India, there are so many, and they're very feared because they can do all kinds of things. They can just possess a whole village with their ghosts. They have spirits at their control due to the power they have derived from worshipping the terrible form of the material energy. And the kind of worship, it's not just worshipping with some flowers, as I mentioned, the kind of meditation they do is sitting on 5 human skulls in a cremation ground, meditating in the dark of night. If there's a storm with lightning and thunder, that's better. It's just if you can get a human corpse, which you're most likely to get at the cremation ground, and sit on that, then that's very good for this kind of meditation. And yeah, it's inviting trouble, literally, because Lord Shiva resides in the cremation ground, especially comes at night, with all his ghost companions. And they're not going to just say, give you anything very easily. So they'll test you in so many ways. And if you go through, the whole thing is not to get afraid. If you get afraid, they possess you. If you don't get afraid, you can bring the spirits under your control. And then you can use that to manipulate people, put fear into them, entice women. You can do all kinds of things, but you have to suffer. You have to suffer terribly. Very, very sinful activities. You get very, very severe reactions. Now, those who try for siddhi, for the siddhi of liberation, they try to do so with the idea that, yeah, you become completely detached from everything, but they're not by following the Vedic process. The Vedic process is meditation on Brahman. One has to become very pure. And then one can become free from material attraction. One generally has to be Kshatriya or a Brahmana to even begin to have the qualification to undertake such a process, generally a Brahmana. With the Shakti kind of meditation, there's no such stricture. Anyone from any caste, any human being, can do so. But instead of trying to become pure and detached, they try to become totally impure and become detached. Like that, drinking wine, having sex with a corpse, and doing all kinds of things with the idea of becoming totally detached. So instead of trying to go up, 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 and out, they try to go down, 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 and out. But if you go down, 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 and you don't go out, then you're down. You're in a lot of trouble. But even if you go out, where do you go? That is a question. They're definitely not qualified for the kind of liberations that's described in the Vedas. They don't follow the Vedic path. The Vedas, not exactly in the Vedas, but in the Upanishads, and then the meditation on Brahman, on Omkar, and then we have Tantra in the the right-wing tradition, but then this is left-wing Tantra, which is committedly non-Vedic. They take some concepts from the Vedic culture, like having a guru. Tantrics will have a guru, generally. worshipping deities, but they're committed, they don't follow the Vedic path. So it's a very, very dangerous path. They don't qualify. If you don't make it in one life, you're in a lot of trouble because you're still stuck in the material world and you did so many sinful things. When Arjuna asked Krishna, what happens to the yogi who is not successful in one life? What happens to him? And Krishna said, Nahi kalyana krit kaschit durgatin tate gacchati. One who has done auspicious activities never meets with a bad goal, but this tantric sadhana, it's not auspicious. It's deliberately and pointedly inauspicious. So if you die without finishing, you're stuck. You're really in a bad place. And you really, even to start it, what kind of mentality does it take to even begin to start that? Those who try to get liberated by this process, one of the things they have to overcome is the lure of the various spirits, ghosts, offering them material benediction. You can get great powers, but they have to become detached from that. So the places where such sadhus have attained siddhi in shakti upasana, they're considered to be more powerful and even more powerful due to the presence of these samadhis. I always wonder how that is, because if they're liberated, and people will bow down at the samadhi. But if they're liberated, then they're not there. They shouldn't be there to give you any blessing, right? In the Vaishnava system, we can worship at the samadhi, because we know that the person, the great devotee, they've gone to Krishna, and Krishna is everywhere, and by Krishna's mercy, that great devotee can be personally present at his samadhi also to offer boons. But in the case of those who say they want impersonal liberation, if they got it, then they're not here to give benedictions. You see people worship Buddha, but if he got nirvana, then he's not there to reciprocate or give you any benediction. And they have all these funny ideas. He's hanging around. So he's hanging around to help you, but then why is he hanging around? When you get nirvana, you don't quite get it. You have to hang around for some time and help all these silly people who come and offer you all kinds of things. And most of them don't ask for advancement on the path of becoming nothing anyway. They all want material boons. Anyway, that was Buddha's trick to get them to worship him. So one Shaktipitam that I was close to recently, I mentioned previously, I was at Ek Chakra, the birthplace of Nityananda Prabhu, and just about 5 kilometers from there is the place of Tarapitam. Tara is a form of Shakti, and you can understand from the name Tara, it means she who takes one over. So that's considered very auspicious for most people don't go there for crossing over out of this material world, but they want to cross over their present difficulties or whatever. And she has a somewhat beneficent form, not quite as horrible as others of that genre. So she takes a cross, but we wonder, where do they go? Not to Krishna. They don't go to Krishna. They don't even go to the impersonal Brahman. So maybe they go to the Shiva. They go to Shakti. But Jiva Swarupai Krishna Nitya Das. The actual Swarup, or eternal form of the Jiva, is as an eternal servant of Krishna. So worship of demigods can never bring one to perfection unless it's done specifically as a part of worship of Krishna, with the understanding that you are a great devotee, please bless me for advancement in Krishna consciousness. It's not required, but it can be done. And especially if, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling throughout South India, he went to Kanyakumari. He must have made a special journey to go there. In other words, if you're going from one holy place to another, then there may be a temple of Devi on the way, but it's not the case with Kanyakumari, because it's not on the way to anywhere. It's right at the end of the what they now call the Indian subcontinent. So he must have gone there specifically to take darshan in that time. And the very place is auspicious as the southern point. And then he came up again. So he visited there. But he wouldn't pray to her as most people do. But he would pray, give me love of Krishna, as he would in all temples. So we can do that also. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Vancha kalpatarupyascha kripa sindhubhyascha. Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.